There we go. Well, after a hiatus from last week, we're back at it again today.
Yeah, not only that, but we had to fix all kinds of technical difficulties.
Yeah, I think the problem with sometimes the computer program makers try and make things simple, and it turns out to be anything but. Anyway.
Anyway, we got it going.
Yeah.
So we have the undivided attention of our viewers for 20 minutes.
That's right. I just saw a couple of things. I think we probably should be looking at world economic issues and maybe how they're going to have an impact on border migration issues. But it was also interesting. I saw that for some of the people in Canada and hopefully for some of our US viewers, that the ArriveCan app has been taken to the federal court as being unconstitutional. So it'll be interesting to see where that ends up in the long run.
Yeah, well, that's a legal challenge that's based on what, that the information they're collecting is not relevant to the what the
I'm not sure how what they it didn't really go into details. It was just kind of a highlight there. But it's also some people are saying that you show your Canadian passport, which basically page one says, please allow the bearer full and unhindered access. So maybe it's challenging on mobility rights. I don't know.
Well, that there was this fellow who has been on social media, who is a CBSA officer who's on leave, and he's been posting various comments on this. And it was interesting to note that they were going to take him to court and aren't doing very well at it because he's still
Yeah,
stuck.
it's interesting on that aspect, and he did seem to have a few issues, not only with the app, but with the organization as well. So
Yeah, well, I would put that aside because that, to me, the challenge in the courts on the legality of the app is pretty relevant. And I guess the unintended consequences of the app, which are quite open to debate, is how it is impacted on the hospitality industry, on the tourist industry, on the border towns. I mean, traffic is way down, and I know the mayors of various cities along the border have, and chambers of commerce, and even
business associations, yeah.
so and some Congress on the American side, there's been some pretty vocal comments against this essentially interference at the border through bureaucratic means that some congressmen from and women from Buffalo, upstate New York, and I believe someone from Washington State as well has complained that this is not in the same spirit of the agreement of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or whatever the
Yeah.
USMCA, as they call it now.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see where it goes, but that will probably be a view and a talk for another session, maybe.
Yeah, well, we'll watch that court case.
Yeah. But I guess the other concern that's coming up now is moving into our cold season, although I must admit that we haven't really had a warm season to speak of, at least here. And worldwide, people are now starting to be concerned about what the energy costs are going to be. And if that becomes a cost, how many more people are going to be jumping in boats to go, maybe not north, but to go south? Is that going to have an impact on border issues?
Well, it gets cold in the winter in the Northern Hemisphere. And when you read that in the EU, for example, they're passing regulations all over the place to force businesses and consumers and ho householders to reduce the the maximum temperature in the winter to 17 degrees Celsius. That's kind of cool, as a temperature. And then, you look at some of the reports, which our climate change friends don't particularly want you to see. There are long lineups of trucks in Poland looking for coal and wood because they're already concerned that there won't be enough energy to heat their homes and run their businesses and keep the lights on and so on. You have dire warnings from various sectors of the economic community that this is not sustainable, and the whole business of sanctions has basically backfired. This is, of course, the war in Ukraine and targeting Russian businesses. That this was a great idea until the winter shows up. And one of the things I don't understand, and I really have difficulty in grasping this concept, if I am going to put sanctions on another country and be very, do whatever I can to put them out of business, why do I think they're going to ship gas to me when I'm basically telling them to hit the road? I'm being very gentle here, because if you're going to get into a an economic war with an adversary, then I don't understand how that adversary is somehow obligated to continue to send energy. Like, what did these people think was going to happen?
I think it gets back into government economic issues. They're looking for cheap solutions. They're looking for moving green, which I think part and parcel was Germany's problem. They wanted to get away from coal fire. They went to nuclear, which may or may not have its own issues. They've shut down a few of their plants to get cheaper Russian natural gas. So that's an economic thing. Is it backfiring? Yeah. China as well. They're having problems getting their liquefied natural gas or whatever it is. And they've one report that I had read said they'd open up 17 new coal fire plants. Yeah. If it gets cold like it does, as China, you aware and our viewers are aware, is still in the northern hemisphere, so some of it is going to be cold. And I think when you sit back and you look, the weather forecast, even today, I saw a little blurb that says we can expect a bit colder than normal winter. So, 17 degrees Celsius might seem like an ideal target, but it's still going to be awful cold, especially when you start to get down into the minus Celsius.
Yeah. Moreover, I don't, I'm not sure I understand how they're going to be able to help out in the depth of winter, the countries that have no natural sources of energy. The other thing that is peculiar, and while I'm sure some economist types will respond to what I'm going to say, is what do countries like the US and Canada have to do with the price of gas going up to 80% because of the situation between Europe and Russia? What is the, yes, I understand there's a world price for oil, etc., but why does natural gas go up in North America when none of it's shipped to Europe? What was the impact of Russian closing down the pipeline on people in on this side of the planet? Like, it's greed, or I'm seriously having to question the reaction of the governments and the energy producers in North America. Like, why would my gas bill here in Canada go up because the Russians have turned off gas into the EU? Like, what's the correlation here?
Well, maybe to share the pain, I don't know, but I still can't understand what that's going to do as far as world people traveling. I mean, if people in, well, let's say Poland, Hungary, wherever, are more concerned now with trying to keep their houses warm, will that have an impact on how they're managing their borders? Will they open it up to people that are bringing in bags of coal instead of cash? I don't know.
It's a bit of a mystery to me, but certainly the impact on human mobility is going. What will all the people freezing in the north of Europe do? Go head down to Italy or from Italy to north? I mean, you think about this as a basic need to stay warm. If it comes down to the depths of winter in February in the northern parts of Europe that has no gas because they put all their eggs in the one basket with the Russian pipelines. Where are those people going to go? I mean, what will be the impact of all those North Africans and Middle Eastern types who are busily trying to get into Europe at the moment? Are they going to go, well, I think it's time to head south, go back to, the Middle East where it might not be what I want, but I'm not going to freeze to death.
Well, and then coupled with that too is right now we don't have the electric infrastructure to get cars going to where they want to go. So are we going to have more people jumping in their cars and putting more fossil fuel emissions into the air because they're using their car to get to where it's warm? And then I think you would also mention the other day that, some countries are allowing cheap gas for their own residents, but people passing through and tourists are paying the full price. So, and you can only fill up once a week or something. So what are we going to do? You know as well as I do that if you're in an electric car, cold affects the battery. How far will you get on a Tesla Model 3 that is supposed to go 400 kilometers, but in the cold, it maybe only goes
Yeah,
two.
that's where politics is always trumped by physics. I always say, I don't care what the politicians say. The scientists tell me that you can't drive 400 kilometers on a charge, especially in the winter. But the impact really on sort of the folks, the economy is going to have a huge impact on mobility. People will go, look, I can't survive here. I got to go find a job someplace else. Or it's going to take away all those folks who will be unemployed in depths of winter. Where are they going to go? Who's going to look after that? It's almost dystopian the kind of way we're talking about this because you're looking over the precipice here into a void that I don't see any of these leaders, either in Europe or North America, actually talking about. It just seems to be, oh, don't worry, everything will be fine. You don't want to be a Cassandra about this stuff, but there's every indication is everything is not going to be fine. And it's a self-inflicted wound to the economy, to the civil structures, to civil society. All this over a war which is really between two countries far away, and somehow they've decided that everyone has to share the pain of that war. And I have a great deal of sympathy for both sides on this, but this is not something new. This has been in the works for some time, but all of a sudden to decide that everybody else has to have a stake in this, I mean, really, we have taken on in various parts of the world a bunch of pain, which is unnecessary as I see it. And I'm not sure if the regular folks who will be reaping the wind, the whirlwind of this economically and otherwise in the new year, because 2023 pretends to be a pretty difficult time if we're to look at any of the indicators at the moment, from the economic and social perspectives, the intelligence on this going forward is really negative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an old saying, it's difficult to negotiate with angry, hungry people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see any plan afoot by folks in the EU or in North America to deal with the angry, hungry people.
Well, hungry people, certainly. But it goes back, I think, what you were talking before with politicians who are perhaps like ostriches with their head in the sand, spouting off all this information about, oh, it'll be nice, it'll be happy, it'll be good. And then on the other hand, they're whining when somebody yells at them and doesn't treat them with the respect they think they deserve.
Yeah, well, I think that's there's a universality to that one as well. But the last number of election cycles, I'll put it that way, has brought in an atmosphere of it's everything is binary. It's either this or that. No compromise, no negotiations, my way or the highway. You're either this side or you're that side, but no one wants to come into the middle. And the leadership, particularly this past summer, you know, has across the Western sort of hemisphere, politically speaking, you've had a nice summer. Things have been going along, and there's been almost a strange phenomena of this terrible thing going on in the Ukraine and Russia, but everything is okay still. But it's as if I don't know if you know the fable about the cricket in winter, you know, where you know, they weren't preparing for winter, and you know, I think that's all we get is sound of crickets here from these guys on what's going to happen in the future. This is a big metaphor, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, Aesop might have been way ahead of himself on that one. I don't know.
No, it's I think some of the people who are talking about how this is going to turn out are somewhat delusional because they seem to think that there's an opportunity here to propel the green movement while everybody else is going to have to, you know, tighten their belts and give up this and give up that and suffer because in the long term we'll have a wonderful world because we're all going to go to renewables. And I, you know, the connection is so bizarre between a terrible conflict that's going on in Europe between the protagonists who've been at it for probably 150, 200 years in recent history, and how, gee, never let a good crisis go to waste. We can convert that somehow into getting everybody on board for, you know, transition to green energy. Like, you know, the leap is just.
Well, there is that leap, but I think we've also chatted before on countries that are being told what to do. Nobody likes to be told what to do. So you're going to be told to turn your furnaces down to a maximum of 17 degrees. You're going to be told to do this. You're going to be told to do that. What's that going to do to these economic unions that are, well, one which is fairly well established, the EU. Here in North America, we've got the, I still call it NAFTA, although it's whatever it happens to be. Is that going to have an impact on the way those are looked at and enforced? And will it cause a breakdown on that, where we go back to more insular, me first kind of things?
Well, human beings have a tendency to look after themselves in tough times, you know. Beggar thy neighbor is something that's not unusual in cases like this. But what I think is a fantasy in full technicolor is that this is a great opportunity to push the green agenda. And I'm thinking, boy, oh boy, I have nothing against moving towards, renewables and all that. But instead of a revolutionary approach, I'd like to see more evolutionary approach. And it just seems to me that there's this dogma or zealots have taken over. Oh, this is great. And, you know, when they're flying around in their jets promoting all this stuff, while the rest of you and us are told, you know, you can't go anywhere with or you won't be able to anywhere because you can't afford the gas in your car. You know, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And then you start to really question, you know, what is the real end game here? And, you know, this pitting one group against another, is on something that in terms of science could be dealt with if we just don't try to do something like when they invented this magical date of 2030, like all these governments have 2030, 8 years from now. If we don't do all these things, it's the end of the world. The boogeyman's coming to get us. Where'd they pull this out of? And so, you know, we're just ordinary folks chatting here about, you know, stuff that isn't clear to us. Okay. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to say, well, okay, if you're going to turn off the power, you're going to turn off the gas, I'm going to be freezing in the dark and I'm going to be happy about that because sometime down the future, I'm going to save the planet. Are you nuts?
Well, and again, saving the planet, you know, we here in Canada virtually have a carbon tax on just about everything. And that money, nobody knows where it's going other than into general revenue, which means that it's going to be put somewhere where a politician thinks it's good. That might be green energy. It might not be.
We don't know.
And I guess from my personal point of view on that is that I don't mind paying a green tax if that went into a separate bank account that promoted research and development, that helped companies turn away from coal or nuclear or whatever. But I don't see that happening either. So
no.
Politicians would be better off jumping onto that, you know, and looking again, migration issues. There's a lot of smart people around the world. Should we be asking those people to come and help countries out?
Yeah. You know, it's these are the dog days of summer. We're going to be going into the fall, and once the leaves start to turn and tempers start to drop and companies and plants start to slow down because they don't have the wherewithal to continue and layoffs begin. I mean, these are all, as I said earlier, it's kind of dystopian, but every indication is that it's not going to be business as usual here by the time we get into the new year.
Yeah.
And as far as the, you know, the situation in Europe with regard to the Russians and the Ukrainians, I think I said the other day that, you know, I don't see any truths to any of what's being reported on how that is evolving because, as I point out, where are the journalists at the front line of this war? I'd never see any reporting on any of the mainstream media of the war correspondents going out there and showing us what's going on. All we seem to get is sound bites from the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense or some Russian source where, you know, both sides are apparently winning. Well, no, in any conflict, both sides don't win. And so there's again, that is an area where we're kind of not knowing what's going on, yet we see the impact on our lives because of the way the inflation is like gone off the charts in all the developed countries. We see food supplies being at risk because of some harebrained schemes that are being invented by zealots about things like fertilizer or shutting down farms in Netherlands. And I mean, the list is, you don't have to be a conspiracy nut to go say, what are all these things that are happening seemingly in concert, but yet quite independent of one another? Like, what is the thing that is propelling us in this direction? And I'm afraid I can't buy into, it's because of the war in Ukraine. That's a very convenient excuse for our illustrious leadership, but that's not good enough. Okay, that's not going to put food on the table for a family in Madrid. It's not going to keep the gas prices down in North America, which is, it's there are so many parts to this that are almost incomprehensible, because you mean I'm having difficulty even talking about it, because there's so much information that's so disjointed and so all over the map about this, is that it's overwhelming. I mean, I really have problems connecting the dots with some of this, and to see if there's any leadership from those people that we've ostensibly elected. And I say this unreservedly across the board, I have yet to see any real Churchills show up, or any Maggie Thatchers, or any I don't know, name other luminaries from history who showed up and said, okay, here's what we have to do to bring people together. Can we get this collective? We better get our act together. Now, where are those people? I don't see them. And so you feel a little bit, at least I do, overwhelmed to some extent with situations, more than one, that seem to be connected, but they're not connected yet. They're all, there's a crescendo of stuff happening around us, socially, economically, culturally. And you go, whoa, maybe I should turn off all these gizmos in my house and go live in a cave for a month, to decompress.
Well, I forget, what was her name? Collins, Judy Collins. All the politicians in the world, bring in the clowns.
Yeah. That is. But anyhow, we've been all over the map today, but I guess that's really the
topic
in which we're living in. We're all confused. Yeah. We're having debates with limited information that we actually trust.
Yeah.
With leadership that we're questioning whether they know what they're doing. At the same time, we're facing realities or we're being softened up to realities of energy crisis and a real, like I said, again, a dystopian future here. This particular podcast today is one of those. That's a weird day, I guess, for us to be trying to figure out where we're going as a society.
I told you about one individual that I had met when I worked on the border many, many years ago, who used to sit in the waiting room of the immigration station watching what went on, because his occupation was that of a comedian. And he said, I have to watch what goes on here because I just can't make this stuff up. So I think that's probably what we have, what's going on here with this whole issue. We just can't make this stuff up, and it's happening all around us, and nobody seems to know what the end game is, or where it's going, or what the final objective will be. I'm like you, I'm at a loss for words. I have no idea at all.
I mean, closer to home here, you look at influx of migrants through the U.S. southern border, which is literally a flood of humanity coming into the U.S. And they're talking that now that they're almost at 2 million people who have come in over the last year. That's a phenomenal number of souls that have embarked on a journey to the promised land of the U.S. Well, when that promised land has serious economic problems facing its homeland, where are these people going to fit in? Like, I'm thinking, no one's paying attention to this. If the economy is going to be so negatively impacted, what are these people going to do? And how will the host community, that is the United States population collectively, deal with all these newcomers who they'll have to be housed, they'll have to be, the schools will have to be built. I mean, all these things. You almost wonder if this is done on purpose to cause discontent within the society. I mean, you know, as the milk of human kindness will go real sour real fast.
Well, and coupled with that, we've seen over the summer the number of migrants that have been locked up in trucks and have perished because of lack of air conditioning, lack of water. Last winter, we saw the reverse of that, where people were freezing to death because of the cold weather.
That's right. That
for those
Southeast
people, there's
Asian
a no-win situation.
Yeah, froze to death on at the Manitoba, North Dakota border, I believe, or whatever state is next to Manitoba. My geography is a little fuzzy at the moment. But yeah, no, I you know, it's a head scratcher. Today's program should be called the Head Scratcher Program, because
well, there we go.
Focus on headlines, just kind of the environment in general, and you know, your head's almost on a swivel trying to figure out what's going on around us and how to make sense of it all.
Well, it used to be the tennis game where you would.
Yeah.
Now you almost have to be an owl with a head that goes 360 degrees to try and catch it all in. But
no, it's I know that our viewers will and our listeners will think these two guys lost it today, but it really is. It's been that kind of a week since we last spoke. There's just so many things going on that don't seem to add up.
Well, it almost to me it seems like there's several things going on, and they're all vying to be number one on the hit list, and there just isn't the impetus to drive it there because there's just way too much going on to try and focus on any one issue.
Well, and the other thing that I find a little disconcerting was there are things that are happening that are reported in the legitimate press, I will call it, not necessarily political or what have you, but when the case in come back to Canada, where a newscaster gets fired, and it basically 2 weeks ago, and that's continually in the news. Meanwhile, there's people being shot on the street. There's homeless all over the place. There's really serious social economic problems facing this country. And the media focuses on a 58-year-old woman who has had a great career as a broadcaster, but for whatever reason, you know, they've separated. She separated from the company she worked for, and that becomes the headliner. Days on end, which is, you know, to me, okay, that's an issue. That's a cultural and it's a labor relations issue and all those other things. But there's far more important things to go on for 2 weeks than that particular case. You know, it's like a first world problem. But what about the more serious issues that have to be done? You showed me that video of those three police in Arkansas beating the daylights out of this guy on video. And I saw it once. I haven't heard nothing about it since. And you're thinking, wow, how come that hasn't been in the headlines? It seems to have
been. Well, there's that concern. Here again in Canada, we've got the opioid crisis, we've got the homeless crisis, we've got the transient populations, we've got I don't know how many people on unemployment, but everywhere I go, I see now hiring, job open, looking forward to having you work for our company. You know, it's a head scratcher. With
here's another head scratcher. We talked about this the other day. There are over 10 million job openings in the U.S. according to their statistics, and there are 5 million unemployed. And the number of unemployed keeps going up recently, applying for unemployment benefits. Well, how can there be 10 million jobs begging, but there are 5 million people who apparently are unemployed? Again, you go, well, this makes no sense. And then the other one that just happened, which again is another one of those social things where they decided to, in the U.S., again, this is a very U.S. issue, let's just forgive all the student loans for all these kids that have racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans by attending very fancy universities who basically priced themselves out of business. Man, oh man. So, you know, the poor schlub who's, you know, a barista at a coffee shop or a carpenter or a welder or whatever, that individual isn't getting any breaks, but the person who racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars in tuition at a university like Harvard or Stanford, well, that's okay because they're going to make like $200,000 to $300,000. We'll give them a break on their loan. How does that work in society that is trying to come to, or leaders that are saying they're going to bring you together? That doesn't bring people together. That just gets people angry.
Yeah. You got to wonder, are they going to be forgiven their tax for a couple of years too now?
I don't think so. Anyhow, these are all the, maybe we should call this episode the head scratcher episode, because we're all over the map and we're still scratching our heads.
Well, it's, yeah. There's just way too much going on to try and make sense of any of it all. You know, the old saying used to be, there are far better minds than mine that are thinking about this. And I'm beginning to wonder about that too.
Our time is up.
Yes, yes.
We have to take a hiatus for a week now. Maybe we'll come back with the next episode. It'll be more focused.
Well, it's always good to have a rant session.
Yeah, to our viewers and listeners, let us know what we should focus on next week, because this has been the head scratcher episode, which is,
yes, indeed. I guess on the plus side, we can always have a better week coming up.
So, all right, Bob, I'll see you next week. Take care.
See you later. Bye.